Steve. All right, everybody. Hello and welcome to the show. It's been a while. Kind of trying to figure this all out. Just been kind of busy and kind of been distracted a little bit, and it's kind of nice to kind of get back into it. So kind of for me is just to kind of talk about stuff that I'm really liking to watch right now. I'm going to try not to ever really talk about anything I don't like. You know, that's, I don't think it's really helpful, but I really like to talk about the movies that, and TV shows, you know, stuff that's, you know, worth watching, worth spending our time, because I think that's it's one of the major issues right now, is the fact that you can do anything, and you can watch so much, and can you watch everything? And you have to, well, I feel like I have to watch something. So, anyway, let's see. I'm sure, you know, of course, if anything else, you could probably be going to school. You know what? Don't watch anything. Go read something. Yeah, we should be reading something. But you do it afterward. Right now, let's see. Let's get into a couple of things that are happening. You know what I really hate is like the websites that all they do is talk about, hey, let me tell you what happened, the ending of this movie that just came out like a day ago. Like, come on, man. Kung Fu Panda just came out. You're going to tell me what the post-credit scene is about? Like, just leave it alone. So many of these things. So dumb. Like, I don't understand. It feels like we're shooting ourselves in the foot here. You know, something that I have to go back to, and just, you know, to take a little detour. Well, not too much of a detour, but The Simpsons. So, season 35, all right? That's kind of where they're at right now. And it looks that, like, let's see. Let's see. Da-da-da-da-da. Something about Maggie in season 35. Let's see. Oh, okay, yeah. So it's about the fact that Maggie can talk. Okay, never mind. Or at least they have her speak at one point. I think it's when she's older. But it looks like maybe that was, I guess, ignored again. I don't know. Who cares? I was more interested if it was going to be, like, you know, some kind of revelation about, you know, who shot Burns. Because that was, I remember watching that. And that was a big deal, like trying to figure out and waiting, you know, for the next season to find out who was the one that shot, you know, Mr. Burns, and find out that it was Maggie. I liked it. I thought it was cool. You know, whatever. It's a comedy show. I thought it was fun. But yeah, there's not a lot coming out right now. Obviously because of all the strikes, it looks like the IATSE. Let me go ahead and make sure I got that right. IATSE union. Let's see what they do. Right. They are the Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. Let's see. Yeah, man, they do a lot of behind the scenes stuff, essentially. Yeah. Live events, motion picture, television production, broadcast, trade shows. Yeah, I mean, they're essentially another union that's incredibly necessary and, you know, probably deserves to get paid what they're worth. But anyway, let's keep going on and see what's going on, you know, with the rest of the world. Kind of want to get into, like, whatever news or anything that's kind of interesting or fun that I saw. And I'm a bad person too, but I keep clicking on the articles I shouldn't be clicking on too. Stupid clickbaity ones. Let's see. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, I guess there's not a lot of, like, news stuff this week as far as movies go. It looks like Quentin Tarantino might be, obviously his last movie, he says, it's going to be, you know, The Movie Critic. But, I mean, I always kind of figured he was just going to get into writing or probably doing a lot more writing for movies, just things like that. I mean, I feel like maybe directing takes a lot out of you, especially, I mean, not a lot of people could be like Martin Scorsese and be as prolific and still be shooting in like your 80s and you're making these crazy long ass movies, and it seems like he's coming out with one like every year and a half, and that's a tough schedule. So, you know, more props to him. Let's see. Yeah, all right. Never mind. Looks like there's nothing much going on. And honestly, I haven't been watching too much TV. There just doesn't seem to be anything I'm really interested in. But it, you know, there are a couple of movies that have come out, and I think that's kind of where I've been like sitting at, like just really solid movies that just fun. But yeah, let's get into some of them right now. Obviously, the big one is going to be Dune 2, so I definitely want to talk about that. But first, I want to talk about, you know, two little small ones that I think it'll be really interesting for people to watch. One of them, the first one is Ricky Sinicky, and that just came out a couple days ago. It came out today on Amazon Prime, so March the 7th. Zac Efron, I'll watch Zac Efron most anything, especially in a comedy, and John Cena. Now, what I thought was really... I thought the movie was fine. I think it's pretty funny. It's got Jeff Ross in it, which is pretty hilarious. William H. Macy. Let's see. Who else is in this? Obviously, John Cena. Ooh, Jeff. I probably already mentioned Jeff Ross. But at one point, they put him in a K-hole. Hey, watch a movie. But I think this is the kind of thing that I want to see more of. Like, let me see what the budget of this was. Probably doesn't tell you because it's Amazon. But I gotta imagine that, or I gotta hope that it's not gonna be that crazy amount. And I wanna see more of these. Like, I don't even wanna give the movie away, but I think it's just a solid watch. It's funny. Scott, which is a comedian? Andrew Santino, there we go. He's one of the leads too, along with Zac Efron, John Cena, Jermaine Fowler. But it's like, give me a movie that's going to be somewhat funny, but then give me something to, you know, kind of tear up at the end. And then this was kind of, it worked for me. You know, it really took a crazy little turn, and I thought it was pretty fun. And I want to see more of that. One of those movies that I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure it came out last year, that I loved, just fucking loved. It was like, that was Joyride. Like, holy crap, which I thought was just so funny and just, I don't know. Just give me more of that. I want more off-the-wall stuff from just all kinds of people. Give me some more comedies, man. Like, what happened? It's like they all died out, and no one wants to do anything. Like, things can be funny, man. Things can be funny. I don't know what they would be. I'm not want to think of that funny, but whatever. Okay, next one after that, I would say, is Summer in Queens. Now, I'll watch anything that has Queens in the name, obviously. Directed by Ray Romano, in his directorial debut, with a screenplay by him and Mark Stegman, also starring Ray Romano. You know, kind of like the Ricky Sinicky one, I wouldn't say it's a by-the-numbers movie. Like, it was definitely not funny. It was a lot more of a kind of a serious, I wouldn't say like a, there's some jokes in it, you know, but it's not, that's what it's really going for. So it's basically about, Ray Romano, his character. His name is Leo. He's married to, actress, Laurie Metcalf, and they have an okay marriage. You know, things are kind of just okay. She at one point had gone through, breast cancer, surgery. So that's kind of something that's popped up in their lives, and they kind of, I guess for them, like kind of putting all their, not their pressure, but all this love on their son. And, you know, everyone seems to be, you know, pushing him around and crap like that. And then you find out that the kid might be good at basketball. And Ray Romano, his character, Leo, just his father, takes it upon himself to do anything or everything he can to make sure this kid gets a scholarship and is happy, because he's never had that. And there's... It was just... I thought it was just a really interesting movie for his debut. Again... If you want just something feel good, not going to blow you away. It's not going to change, you know, your perception on film. But again, just another one that's solid. If that's what you're going to look for. If you want something that's going to be really not, I want to say really sad. It's got a lot of heart. And I appreciated that. Especially, you know, all the New York accents. That's always really cool. But definitely watch that. But what I really want to get into, obviously, this is the thing for everyone. Obviously, it's going to be Dune Part 2. Denis Villeneuve, I think, I don't think he misses. And, I mean, Blade Runner 2049, Enemy. I mean, what else has this guy done? Let's see. Let me just read off everything because I don't think he's done anything terrible. I haven't seen Maelstrom and Polytechnique. And I need to see those. And wow, they won the first three won the Canadian Screen Award for Best Motion Picture. So again, that's something. Oh, Prisoners, another great movie. Sicario, amazing. Arrival, just another great movie. So this guy, it seems like he's been wanting to work on this Dune movie for a very long time. Like he's been thinking about it. And from what I know, I don't know too much about the Dune books. I think I'm going to have to read them because they do seem pretty interesting. And I which I'll get to some of the stuff that, not that I didn't like about the movie, but I think that I wanted them to touch on more, which I thought just, we'll start everything else and then I'll get to this whole thing I was talking about. But apparently he streamlined a lot of the storylines in the books. He's changed a couple of things. He's changed people's motivations. He's cut out certain characters. And honestly, I'll tell you the truth, for almost 3 hours, I was there. I was for it. The cinematography was amazing. The music was great. The production design, there's so much about Hollywood movies nowadays where you watch it, it looks like everything's so sleek and so plastic, like everything's just got recently cleaned and there's just a sheen to it. And yeah, it feels like everybody is coming to like this hyper-realistic kind of way of filmmaking. And I'm sure that a lot of that has to do with the cameras. But if you put this technology in front of, you know, auteurs, you know, artists, you're going to get some beautiful stuff. And you're obviously looking at a screen and these are not real 100-foot worms, but do they look good? There is a way you can shoot these things. And obviously another example that comes to mind is something like The Creator. Obviously, for all its story faults and all its, you know, plot holes or whatever, another great movie that shot with intention and shot with a way you wanted to tell that story. And for something like, you know, for Dune, this is, I think this is everything people were asking for, I would think. I watched the David Lynch version. I liked the David Lynch version. I'll watch anything David Villeneuve has done. But let's check to see how much it's done in the box office, because I think that's gonna be really important. The hope is that it's gonna be doing well enough to get us a third one, Dune Messiah. And now who knows how long that's gonna take to do. Denis has said that he's kinda tired, and I'm sure, I mean, these probably take a lot of out of you, you know, especially shooting for probably 2 or 3 years, or even getting it already. And, you know, who knows how much of Dune Messiah he's already started writing and whatever's going to happen there. I would love to finish that series before the third one comes out, if that does happen, because I need to get into it. Right. Let's see how well it's done. So on a budget of, I want to say 190 million, but we'll double check that. We're to box office recent. Let's see. Numbers. Give me the numbers, man. Okay, so it's hit $2 million. I don't know if it's... Well, 183 million debut weekend is not bad. Let's see. Bam. To be domestically, internationally for a fantastic 183 million. Expect to hit 200 million on Monday. And this has been out already almost close to a week. So let's see how much of a drop is. you know, afterward, because that's going to really tell you. And I'm hoping what it is that people are going to go back and see it more. And honestly, I might have to. I'm definitely going to watch Kung Fu Panda because I need to watch that. Yeah, you know, a really weird kind of, I don't know if it's like a piece of trivia, but something really cool was that Charlie Kaufman, you know, writer of Adaptation, what else? Synecdoche, New York. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I don't know why all these things are escaping me, but either way, you know, done a lot of work. He, if I'm not mistaken, he has a story credit, or he worked on Kung Fu Panda 2's script. And again, I don't know if that means anything, but to me it does. And besides that, I think it's just a solid film series, and Jack Black's great, so whatever, I'll watch it. And good animation, it's funny. Same thing with like Puss in Boots. Like Puss in Boots, like 3. What am I saying? Like Puss in Boots? I don't really like how I'm saying it. It's too late. I'm not gonna go back. I'm just gonna continue on. Anyway, so the hope is that if it gets into Friday here, it might be hitting 260 million. So the hope is that, again, it keeps going after that. And the film opens in China this weekend. So the hope after that is that if it picks up there, then we're looking at maybe a $300 million film. Let's see. Let's see. This is what they're thinking. If it has a 60% hold, then we're looking, this is from Forbes, and they're saying that if they're looking at about $130 million globally for the weekend, including the Middle Kingdom's receipts, and assuming the film plays there similar to the first Dune in 2021, which took in $21 million, that would push Dune to $390 million by the end of Sunday. So, so the hope is that if it makes $600 million, especially before Easter holiday, which is when Godzilla versus Kong would, might be a big deal, honestly, I'm gonna go watch that. You know, it's a dumb film series, I'm still gonna go watch that. Something about these giant things fighting on screen that I want to see. Anyway, $600 million wouldn't be too bad. Like, let's say that would probably be a $200 million profit. You know, you pay $200 million for the movie. It's probably $200 million for the budget of marketing, and you know, if you got something extra in there, not too bad. So that would be pretty great. And if that were to happen, we would really, really, probably really see a part 3. So if it gets closer to 700, 800 million though, that'll be a big deal. I don't think so. I just don't think there's that many people, and there's not a culture around it, but I think it's big enough. And Denny is a big enough director to draw a crowd. So anything north of 500 million, I think, would be amazing. And probably around 600 is probably when they'll start thinking about probably doing a sequel. But you still got to factor in whatever else after that. And I don't even know how it works nowadays with no DVD sales or Blu-ray sales, or if you push it on a streaming service, how much that makes for anybody. But, you know, it's something to think about. But yeah, 190 million. So pretty hefty, but you can see it on screen. It's almost a 3-hour movie, but I feel like there's nothing in the movie that I would want to cut, and that's already with them already cutting a bunch of stuff out, cutting characters out. So I can only imagine how tight Denny had to make this. Him and John Spates, see what else has he worked on. He's worked on Prometheus. He wrote Prometheus. He wrote Doctor Strange. He wrote Passengers. He wrote The New Mummy. He wrote the first Dune and its sequel Part 2. So, okay. And he was nominated for Academy Award for the first one. All right, not bad. So he's definitely done some work. Some of those movies, you know, could be better. I'm not gonna judge. A lot of things happen while things are being shot, and again, I was going to say I don't want to talk negative, and that's exactly what I'm not going to do. Not going to talk negative. Let's see. Eric Roth also had a screenplay credit as well. He worked on Munich. He worked on A Curious Case of Benjamin Button. He worked on A Star Is Born. He worked on Mank with Darren Aronofsky. Was it Aronofsky? You know, and this is, it's Fincher. There we go, it's Fincher. Oh, I was going to say, if it was Aronofsky, I feel really bad that I didn't see that. Oh, and he also worked on Killers of the Flower Moon. Another movie I really got to give, some effort into watching. It just seems like it's going to be so long. And I'm there, Marty. I really want to be there for you and watch it. But, man, even The Irishman, I haven't even started to do that. It just feels like I'm going to have to pick a whole weekend to get through it all. But anyway, let's talk about Dune, right? Dune Part 2 picks up right after Dune Part 1. You have the princess. I want to say this right. I want to say Irulan Corino. And she's talking about Paul Atreides and how he may still be alive. And, you know, how that could obviously cause some issues with the House Atreides. You know, that people knowing the House Atreides is around there. Then you've got the Reverend Mother dying. And you've got this, you know, Paul's mother maybe eventually taking over. You've got Paul and Chani having this falling in love, him for getting deeper into his, his role as to what the Freeman wanted him to become, which is essentially the Messiah. And I'm not going to say this is a criticism for me, because I obviously think about it's a 3-hour movie already, and I don't know how much more you can add, how much more you can take out, how much more you could, you know, how can you keep people on in their seats for that long, especially in a movie? And then, you know, it's also going to affect how often you can show that movie per day, right? So how much money are you going to make, right? So, but what I really wanted to get into, and I hope it's not a spoiler. I feel like, you know, if you're listening to this, I don't know how you started listening to this. And if you do listen to this, you probably said that we're going to be talking about Dune. So you're probably going to be ready for spoilers. But I really wish I had gone deeper into the idea of the Bene Gesserit, this religion that was essentially created just to control a bunch of people, and how, and seeing that happen in real time, and seeing how long these nuns have been just controlling people throughout time with this prophecy, and then seeing the rebellion, the other side of it, the people that don't believe in it, and how they obviously would fight against it. But, you know, you're stuck on this planet. And one of the coolest things that, which I hope people, and they see it, they appreciate this too, but there's this thing about, obviously, water. You know, water is incredibly important. When they kill people, they take their water so they can use it. When one of their own dies, they take that water, not to use, but they throw it all into this temple. And it's incredibly beautiful and incredibly eerie, just haunting. The shot where they show you just how much water there is, how many people have died for this. What was I getting at? Obviously, the stuff all over the water, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, okay, so, yeah, we're talking about the different sides. So, you know, the people who are rebellious, but then the people who, obviously, like in real life, how, if you believe in something hard enough, and it works both ways, but if you believe in something hard enough, you can find rationalizations and deeper meaning in things that really don't have any. So, you know, when Paul does all the things that the prophecy says he'll do, and you know, they don't know that he knows that he could probably get through this because he's been had. It's just there's so much involved in it, but that doesn't matter because the freemen there, the ones that believe in it, anything they see him do, they just go, oh, well, he's modest. He's so modest. He has to be the chosen one. Or look at how he takes control. He has to be the chosen one, and how that kind of plays out. I really wish that that's where we had gone deeper, but I think maybe that's why I've got to get into the books. Obviously, what is there, like 5 books? And I think there's continuations, and I don't know how much I want to get into it, but definitely if I can read the original Frank Herbert stuff, then, you know, totally cool. But definitely recommend Dune Part 2. It really does have a lot to say, even, you know, for a movie about sandworms and powers and all kinds of stuff and these drugs that they all fight for, called Spice, and it's all ridiculous. But I can't, you know what it kind of reminded me of? It kind of reminded me of Andor, you know, a show set in the Star Wars universe, a universe I really honestly don't care too much about. I don't think the originals maybe have some stuff there, but I feel like it's just lost so much of it. Anyway, not what I want to talk about. But Andor, I think one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. And what a great explanation, or what a great way to show you how wars start, how rebellions start, how you can push people, good and bad, to do things that they really don't want to do, but maybe feel like they have to. How good people use the tactics of evil men to get what they want done as well. How people on the rebellion side, how they might see a need to maybe stoke the fires as well, because they have to tip things over to get the rest of the populace to kind of agree to what's to rebel. You know, there is so much going on in Andor that I cannot wait till another season comes out. Like, I think that's some of the best TV I've seen in a while. So definitely check that out. But I also want to talk, well, I don't want to say but. No, there's no but. That was Dune. Definitely watch it. Definitely watch it in theaters. Don't let it go away before you watch it. It's not going to be the same at home. It's going to look great at home, but you need to see this on a big screen. Like, that's what it's meant to be seen in. But after that, let's do a little closing. You know, I really just want to talk about these comics that I'm reading. Now, the one I think there's, all right, I'm going to talk about 3. One that I think is really cool, and I think I would love to get deeper into. I've only seen the first, I've only read the first issue. Let's see, I want to make sure I pull this up correctly, because I think it's just a really interesting story. But it's by Tom King, and he's written some amazing stuff. Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, the new Supergirl movie is coming out, like the comic book that just came out. He wrote that. He's got a great handle on the character. He's got a great handle on a lot of characters, honestly. He did the new 52, but he did Batman around 2016. That was the War of Joker and Riddles. He did, you know, obviously the death of Alfred, almost a marriage of Catwoman. He's done The Omega Men, which was an amazing book. The Strange Adventures, like, based on the Iraq War, kind of like, it just taking these, and he's done it with a lot of characters, but taking these interesting DC minor characters and then kind of twisting them and putting them on their head. And I mean, come on, Kite Man. He's one of the reasons Kite Man's become such a big thing. There's a spin-off show. Like, I'm sure the Harley Quinn show definitely had a lot to do, but without him writing Kite Man, you wouldn't be seeing him on TV. So I think this guy knows what he's doing when he's talking about writing. But this book, it's called Love Everlasting. My friend is reading this, and he is so picky with the comics that he reads, that, all right, it doesn't mean anything to you guys, but when I told him that I really wanted to finish reading this, he said he's been collecting it. I knew that I messed up by not collecting this, by not noticing that this was coming out, because Tom King's done some great work, and I love romance stuff. So a romance comic written by Tom King, let's go. Okay, so this is like the blurb for like the first one. Joan Peterson discovers that she is trapped in an endless, terrifying cycle of romance, quote-unquote romance. A problem to be solved, a man to marry, and every time she falls in love, she's torn from her world and thrust into another teary saga. Her bloody journey to freedom and revelation starts in this breathtaking, groundbreaking first issue. Now, that's probably not... doesn't really tell you too much. But I think what's interesting, I think the idea is that it's tracking romance, like this woman's hit, like romantic history, but throughout time, almost like you're stuck in this endless cycle of bad romances or things that you feel is love. And I think that's something that a lot of people can kind of appreciate and sympathize with, especially if you've been in this, because it happens to a lot of people, you know, like not everyone gets married on their first time, you know. A lot of people have to go through a lot of heartbreak, and for a lot of people it can feel like this endless cycle that's like you start up and you start something and then you really like someone and then bam, something happens and that's not there anymore, and now you're sad, and now you gotta, and then that comes up again, and then it just keeps going, and for some reason, it doesn't end. And I'm a sucker for framing, like, these concepts into just these crazy, high concept sci-fi kind of way, you know? Same thing with like Jonathan Hickman. I'll talk about Jonathan Hickman for everything, but like the way he can take a character, same as Tom King, like we're talking about, but he can take a character and then flip it on its head and say, hey, this is how we're going to do this thing moving forward. The Avengers and New Avengers dual issues, seeing that play out, you know, the story of Iron Man and Steve Rogers and how that was going to come to a head before Secret Wars, seeing Secret Wars play out after years of the Fantastic Four stuff, and then seeing that lead up into everything else, like just a crazy culmination, seeing him flip the X-Men and making, okay, so the X-Men are known as these characters who were always cheating death, but then making that a part of their core, a part of their, like, their, I wouldn't say their mantra, but a part of their now, like, their story moving forward. Like, what does it do when you can have your own nation and you've beaten death and resurrection is something that you can give out to any mutant freely? You know, what does that do to a society? And it's like those kind of concepts. Like, please use sci-fi, use these crazy concepts to explain these real world things to me. Like, I love that. Make something so macro that it actually reflects the micro. Really big reason why I love Synecdoche, New York. Really, please go watch that. Troy Kaufman wrote, directed it. I believe it's his first movie. And I want to watch it again, but I want to watch it with someone who hasn't seen it. So, because I want to feel how they're feeling when they're watching this. Almost like I want to live through them. So I cannot wait to find someone that will let me do that or allow me to do that with them. But that'll be a good time. But Love Everlasting, check that out. I believe it's gone up to, already it's at 12 issues, and I think there might be 14. Or maybe, oh no, okay, 14 is when, on April 3rd is when the 14th will come out. So right now, March 6th, yesterday is when 13th has come out. Now, I don't know how long this will be. It looks like it's going to be an ongoing series, and I don't know how long Tom King will usually write things. A lot of his DC work has usually been about 12 issues. I want to say 9 to 12, unless this is Batman stuff where he was on there for a lot longer. But Love Everlasting, check that out. Next issue is April 3rd, so you got some time. Hopefully, when I have a little bit more time, I'd like to spread these out so I'm not talking about movies and TV along with comics, because I have a lot to say about like comics coming out. Like, there's just so much to read. Like, at this point, it seems like I have to read it like while I'm at work, too. While I'm at work, if I'm sitting down, if I'm doing nothing and I can just pull out some time, I'll pull out my phone, I'll read. Because there is so much to catch up on, especially all the X-Men stuff. Like, I won't say all of it is great, but I kind of feel like I can't miss out. Anyway, it's a personal issue. Okay, after that, after Love Everlasting, I want to get into Batman. Now, the Batman stuff, I wouldn't say it's... I'm back and forth on it right now. I don't know if I appreciate... It's a lot more of the Joker stuff, and it seems to be like a lot of like, hey, here's Joker year one, and let's break down how this thing came to be. And I am not a fan of when they show you like the stand-up career and all that stuff. Like, I'd rather it be as ambiguous as possible. Like, he could have worked at the chemical plant. He could have been the stand-up. Like, I hate when they just go, no, that's the one. What I do like, though, is that it kind of reconceptualizes something that happened in, I want to say, Justice League number 50, and this is a couple years ago, but what happened there was, you know, Batman sat down in the Mobius chair, when you sit down on it, tells you everything, anything you'd want to know, the Mobius chair knows. So, you know, he asked it, hey, who killed my parents? It tells him Joe Chill. He's like, oh, obviously, yes, that's obvious, you know, good. Like, he's basically testing the chair, see what it knows, right? Then he asks, who's the Joker? And it tells him that there are three Jokers. Now, that's something that hasn't been, like, picked up on. Like, I want to say now it's like a five-year-old story. So it's something that just was left dangling and no one's really kind of touched. Chip has kind of done something with it I kind of appreciate, but for some reason I just don't like the execution of it. But I don't want to get into that portion of it. I think what is to be appreciated is the idea of and I think this is something that Grant Morrison touched upon in Serious House, Serious Earth, Arkham Asylum, Serious House, Serious Earth, when he wrote, I believe it's the first time he wrote Batman. But he wrote the Joker as this, he's not insane. He's something past insane. It's something called super sanity. And now, the idea is that the Joker remakes himself every day in order to cope with, you know, urban life, you know, chaotic urban life, right? That was kind of the idea of it with Grant Morrison. With how he then, I want to say in 2006, 2007, Grant Morrison came back, he was writing Batman, he wrote this story called, and I want to say maybe it's called The Batman of Zur-En-Arr, or maybe just Zur-En-Arr is one of the titles of it. But essentially it's this ongoing storyline, and it is a, I don't want to say a retelling, but okay, what he did was he reconceptualized all of Batman's history, all 70 years, and he's like, all right, let's fit that to 15 years. Let's say this dude started at 20, and we're going to fit that into 15 years. How does that segment... And, you know, he's like, we're going to do the 30s are him starting. The 40s is this, you know, and kind of attaching that to certain points in like in publication history, you know, when there was obviously Batman carrying a gun. So we'll say those are the early days when he was like, you know, didn't know what he was doing. And then later on, the 40s where he's got a couple more custom characters and they're coming out and all right, cool. And then it's the 50s and that's like the comic code authority. So, you know, it seems like it's too gay that there's this man and this boy together. So let's introduce these women. And now it's all about like these women, but then it goes into like the 60s and then it gets like, you know, you've got like the 60s Batman. So it gets like really synthetic. So then things get really funny and, you know, the Joker isn't a killer clown anymore, he's just trying to make you laugh. And like some of the stories are about how the Joker loses a laughing contest to Robin, so it's like kind of dumb stuff like that. And then you got like the 70s and 80s where, you know, Dick isn't Robin anymore. He's become Nightwing. He's become his own man. And Batman wants to be by himself. And he's become this urban warrior again. You know, he's just fighting a war on the streets. And then the 80s come around again. And he has Jason Todd. But then you have the death of Jason Todd. So he just wraps all this stuff into this one character. Into Batman, to this whole history. And he says, I want to destroy, like, the last bits of, like, fear that I have in me or whatever. He goes through his ritual, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, one of the things that they tell you and all that stuff is, like, there is a flashback into when Batman was first starting out. And he had undergone this experiment. But the idea was that you could segment parts of your mind to deal with trauma. Essentially create backup personalities. Which I'm sure that I'm butchering, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm butchering all this stuff here, but the way some people can kind of come up with a coping mechanism, you know, to, let's say, deal with some type of abuse, some form of abuse, and, you know, not the point, but anyways, so this happens to Batman. He creates this, like, backup personality, which is called the Batman of Zur-En-Arr, which is kind of a take on Zorro in Arkham, which is something that Thomas Wayne, his father, told him when they were leaving the theater after watching Zorro. You know, if there was ever someone like Zorro, they would put him in Arkham. Anyway, so it's like a trigger word, blah, blah, blah. But, like, now this is a backup personality of Batman that is all Batman without Bruce Wayne. You know? Cool. Awesome. That's 2006. We're in 2024. Like, it took, what, 18 years, and now he, and I love this. This is what I love about comics. You can take a thread that's been dangling somewhere, and we'll talk about this because it's going to be part of the comic I really want to talk about. But you can take a thread that's just been lingering for years, and if you have a story for it, let's go. Tell me about it. And I love the fact that we're linking back to the Batman of Zur-En-Arr. I think a little stuff with the failsafe stuff is a little wonky, but besides that, really fun, loving it. Chip has a weird, odd, like, handle on the character, and I'm here for it. There's been a couple of missteps, and I think it's because a lot of the crossover events and, you know, editorial mandates probably have make you change a bunch of stuff story-wise, but besides that, I think right now it's been a solid read. But what I really want to get to, and this Al Ewing is doing just some great work, along with, like, Donnie Cates, who's also done some great work on Thor. There's been some great writers on Thor, but right now what's going on, I think, is some of the coolest things ever. So tied into what happened with Loki, which is something I believe the Loki show kind of tied into as well, but Loki is now not the god of mischief. He is the god of stories. And, you know, what does that mean? You know, and there could be all kinds of stories. But what's really interesting is that in the Marvel Universe, comic universe, Marvel Comics is also a publisher in the universe. So in the universe of Marvel Comics, the Marvel Publishing Company has been publishing comics about heroes. And one of those heroes happens to be Thor. So they've been chronicling his adventures, right? So, using magic, there's this guy named Dario Auger. He's like the Minotaur. Kind of literally looks like a Minotaur, but he's all ripped apart. It looks like his skin was ripped and his bones were shaped to look like this Minotaur. It's really messed up. But he runs the Roxxon Corporation, and he has bought the rights to Marvel Comics in the Marvel Universe. And he's using in the Enchantress to then rewrite Thor's history as we're watching it. So you'll have, I believe Loki knows this is happening. That's why he's telling Thor these stories, because he's trying to prepare him, because he's a good enemy. Anyways, I don't want to get too much into it because I don't want to give too much away. But there's a portion where Loki's retelling a story to Thor, and Thor is like, I don't remember it that way, and Loki's like, well, this is the way it's always been, but you can literally see the bad guys rewriting it. And again, like I was telling you, there's something about using these crazy concepts to then tie into real world stuff. And the way they tie into the real world, obviously not just by being meta, but the idea is then that this Roxxon Corporation is going to take over Marvel Comics, not just in the universe, but in our universe. So the books that are going to be coming out in this, I believe it's like for a month. I don't think it's going to last that long, but they're all going to be corporatized by Roxxon. And I think, if I remember this correctly, if I'm thinking this how it's going to happen, but essentially it's going to be that all these books have magically become and have always been, this is the new Thor. This has always been Thor. And it's this corporatized version of what the bad guys want, which kind of feeds into, you know, how everything is corporatized in America, or it's honestly in the world. Which I think it's a little rich coming from Marvel owned by Disney, but whatever. You know, if a writer can get something, you know, shoved in somewhere that gives you a lesson, why not? Let's do it. So I'm totally appreciate that. Please, please read that. Like I was telling my brother, comics don't make as much money. Well, not that anyone thinks it makes money, but it doesn't sell that much per month. So we need these books to sell so that we can get good stories and good writing out of them. I think that's something to appreciate. But anyway, I think I've taken up too much time already. I'm going to try to keep these a little shorter, but also a little more frequent throughout the week. I'm going to be posting some writing on my website. It's probably going to be, you know, some... I want to do kind of like a travelogue and kind of like... there used to be this thing called Live Journal. I'm sure it's still a thing. But I really loved how you could write stuff on there. No one knew who you were, but I loved this idea of chronicling something. So I think I'm going to do a lot of stuff on there. Probably do a lot of, you know, thoughts. Because I have a lot of dumb shit to say. And I'm sure a lot of it will get repetitive. But I think it'll be good to have people start to, you know, maybe editorialize me a bit. You know, maybe, hey, maybe, you know, talk about something else because you've been talking about this for too much. Like, hey, I might need that shove a little bit, you know. But not only that, but I also want to kind of just put kind of some examples of, like, writing excerpts. You know, nothing that I think I would want to get published because I'm putting it on the website. But I think ways of just stories that I want to write, and hopefully people can give me, you know, criticism on it. Like, I'll appreciate anything because I want to try to write. I think that'd be kind of fun. And I don't know if I'd be getting good at it, but, you know, I want to try. So let's see. But yeah, so we'll have some stuff like that. But what I'd really want to do with the podcast is I'd like to have, you know, I want to talk about all the movies and stuff that I've seen throughout the week and the weekend before. Like Kung Fu Panda, I'm not going to be back from New York till Monday night, and I'd like to get this edited tonight, probably not tonight, but try to get this edited tomorrow so I can publish it tomorrow, Friday the 8th, to come out. But then I'd like to see Kung Fu Panda over the weekend so I can talk about it on Tuesday. And then next week, Wednesday, comics will come out, so I'd love to pick some stuff up then and then try to put something out for Thursday so that hopefully I can kind of lead into that. And then I would love to do a Friday thing. I'm trying to figure something out because I usually get home and I want to do something crazy, and I don't really want to talk about it until I'm able to do it. But I'd love to do like a specific kind of show on Friday night that I could put on every week. And maybe that's being a little too ambitious, but man, it's just something I've been kind of thinking about for a while. But anyway, hopefully you guys enjoyed this first one. Hopefully whoever listened this long, you know, liked it. And if they didn't like it, well, you know, hopefully you have nice things to say. And if you don't have nice things to say, well, you know, don't say anything at all. I'll get the message if it has no views. All right. Thank you and see y'all next week. Bye.